Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
A man sitting in his living room having a nice quiet cup of tea by himself, and he hears through the sliding glass door the sound of his neighbor. And have you seen those commercials, cartoons with all those strange little marks? You know, with the and the man next door over the wall, he's just having a fit. And our neighbor, he hears this man yelling and going through a crisis, and he thinks, oh my God, what's happened to Walt? He goes outside and he peeks over the wall, and there's Walt, and he's wrestling with a lawn chair. He's tied up in it, and he's yelling at the thing. Bill, he says, Walt, man, what's happened? What's going on over there? And Walt, struggling with this thing, he says, stupid lawn chair. Said a 12-year-old could put it together in 5 minutes. And he's still fighting with it. And Bill says to him, well, Walt, look, man, did you read the instructions? And naturally, Walt looks up at Bill and says, hey, that's for dummies, man. Now, in case the point's missed already, how many of you have fought with a lawn chair recently? Actually, it's more like computers now, isn't it? Or stereo systems or the new television. But have you ever literally had one of those moments where you're sitting with something and you start... How many of you ever called an electrical device stupid? Let me see hands, please. Come on, all of you put your hands. There's a person in this room, and let's get this out. Let's right now, so we're clear on this. I know all about you. I'm telling you, I do. I know everything. And that means that just because you don't raise your hand doesn't mean that you don't do it. And you'll have a lot more fun here if you go ahead and just let it go. We might as well start right at the top. Just let go. Here, say, I'm not going to raise my hand. Somebody's going to know I fight with my toaster. Your neighbors already know that you do. You're the only one that doesn't hear you yelling. Now, to the point of this, because it's an important one, when we fight with something, no matter what it is, whether it's a computer, a lawn chair, a toaster, what is it that we're actually fighting with? Yes, exactly. We're not really fighting with the thing, although I'm going to say it again. You say, you stupid computer. What we're fighting with is what we don't understand about the computer. What we're fighting with is what we don't understand about the situation that we're in. That's the only fight we have. We blame the thing. Call it, by the way, have you ever called the hammer stupid? We blame the thing, but key here to understand at the outset of this is that there is something inside of us that when we run into something and we suddenly reach a point where we can't go past our own understanding, we will turn on that object, we will turn on that person, and begin to want to blame it for what we're going through. And as that happens, a certain series of psychological events take place. And one is, the first thing that happens, you're already frustrated, yes or no, I'm starting to feel frustration. And as frustration grows inside of me, the impatience reaches a certain peak. And in the impatience reaches a certain peak, then out comes the explicative, out comes the stupid thing, what's wrong with it? And we're in a war with our VCR. Now, I think that it's incredibly important that we understand and get set out for ourselves right away that part of what it means right now for us, our lives, if we examine it, and I ask you always, I do, to look at yourself while we're talking, while we're having this good time tonight. Human beings are always in a fight with something, aren't we? How many of you will agree to that? They're always in a fight with something. We fight to regain. Something happens to a picture we have of what we're hoping for the future. We'll fight to regain that. Somebody says something that we don't like what they said, and we'll fight to make them see where they were wrong. We'll fight to resolve something that happened in our past that we incidentally have no control over, but we'll still... How many of you argue with people that aren't even here anymore? There is inside of us a very, very unseen dynamic that we're going to expose here at the top of this talk, so that by the time we're done, because I have a number of important ideas to give you, we'll be able to see why it is that this part of us that presently meets moments in our lives, whether it's a toaster or a tormenting human being, And in the moment that we meet that person or that condition and we start to fight with it, the minute that we start the fight, we've lost the battle. The instant that we do that. And I'm going to show you, and by the way, I'll back up a little bit. If what I say tonight isn't practical and utilizable immediately, it's of no value. If you hear somebody speak of truth, of true principles, of higher ideas, and you can't find in your life, in the moment, literally a way to employ what you've been told as terms of a principle, then you should throw it out, because there's nothing more practical than a true spiritual life. Nothing. So here I am, and I'm in a fight with something, and whenever we fight, we talked about this. It's because we've run into what we have yet to understand about ourselves. But isn't it equally true that when we fight with something, that inherent in this, and this is a key idea, is that anything that we feel compelled to control already controls us. I'm going to say it again because it's that important. Anything that we feel compelled to control, to fight with, anything, already controls us. Now, how many of you can understand that without me explaining it? That it, essentially it means that here I am and I'm trying to control a person. I'm trying to control a thought or a feeling that comes and visits me about something from my past, a fear about my future. And I go out and I read books and I get hold of all these different things, and somehow or other I'm going to get this animal tied down. Anything we try to tie down already has its noose around us. Which means if we can start to understand that idea, that the whole approach to our life, which right now is absolutely on automatic, we're mechanical in our reactions to life, because the minute that we encounter something that isn't to our liking, our response to what we don't like is to try to either control it or push it away in some fashion so as to free ourselves from what we say is the disturbance. But the disturbance, again, is not in the person, not in the condition, even though it may stir in us that feeling. The problem is this: we have yet to understand what we need to understand about ourselves. And oh, man. What happens to a human being who begins to realize what a sheer waste of time the blame game is? How absolutely futile, fruitless it is to go through life having reasons for why you hurt. There are reasons that you and I are going to look at tonight, and that by the time we're done, if we've listened, if we've worked together, that we'll start to realize a completely different way of life is possible for us. Where we don't have to fight anymore, because we don't choose that. And I'll use the phrase now and I'll bring it up again. And instead of fighting and bringing in all of that negativity that does nothing other than keep us from learning what we have to learn, because I'll state this as well, it's impossible to learn from anything that you resist. Whatever we resist or deny, we cut ourselves off from the possibility of learning anything further in that moment. And lessons ride in on the back of events. And when the lessons come and we push them away, it's the same as pushing away the opportunity for a certain kind of integration to take place in ourselves based on understanding the truth about ourselves and the moment we're in, instead of fighting with it in a vain attempt to prove that somehow or other we're going to control the situation, when all we wind up is being controlled ourselves by our own negative states. So what we're after here tonight, the first step in letting go, is the individual begins to realize how priceless true self-knowledge is. And listen when I tell you this. Self-knowledge is not what you pick up from what somebody else says. It has nothing to do with what you read in a book. You don't need a teacher for it. Self-knowledge is what happens when an individual refuses anymore to take part in destroying his possibility of changing, of growing, through encountering and meeting himself in a moment. So letting go, that's the first part, is this self-knowledge. But imagine, if you will, I was trying to think of a picture just before the talk started. Have you ever seen those fountains in there in tears, those beautiful fountains in tears? You know, a fountain is an extraordinary thing if you've ever really looked at one, because it's just water. But here is an energy that's being focused into whatever the jets are, and that energy is responsible for the form that you see as it pyramids up. It's the exact same thing when it comes to truth. The more a person begins to understand the truth of himself, through self-knowledge, that individual then begins to gain a new relationship with life. And that's the second part, that new relationship. Out of self-knowledge comes a new relationship within himself. Do you understand? Because I'm no longer fighting the vain fight. I'm no longer trying to prove to myself that who I've taken myself to be actually knows something, because no one who knows what they say they know could be on the ground having a fit with a lawn chair. Or with any other human being.
Love. The brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
So first self-knowledge, then out of that new self-knowledge comes a new relationship with life, and out of that new relationship with life comes a new authority over yourself. New knowledge, new relationship, new authority. And I call those, for tonight's talk, I'm calling them the three pillars of true spiritual power. The three pillars of true spiritual power. That which allows an individual to awaken, to let go, and begin to be and do what is always right and bright for himself and everyone else, by the way, in the world. So this is our task tonight. This is what we're going to do. We're going to set out. We're going to talk about new knowledge. We're going to talk about new relationships that come from it. And then we're going to examine this altogether new kind of authority. Oh, what an authority. What a wonderful thing it is. And you know what? Let yourself remember right now while I'm talking to you. Let yourself remember right now while I'm talking to you the part of you, that little part of you that knows in your heart of hearts that you're not here on this earth to serve anyone or anything that asks you to compromise yourself in any way whatsoever. We've all but forgotten that because it's been so incumbent upon us to compromise ourselves to obtain those things we need to control the world. And we've learned, we're learning now, and it'll be so clear by the time we're done, you won't miss it, that if you have to set out and try to control the world you're in, you've already lost the possibility of having your own life. Because the conditions around you will always dictate to you who you are and what you're supposed to do, instead of letting this new authority that we're going to examine become the true guide for yourself. And so I always, when I do a talk, I always prepare a key lesson, what I call a key lesson. It's sort of the heart of it. And I've prepared one tonight, as I always do, and I'm going to read it to you, and then we're going to go and have nice stories that we can learn the lessons from. Here's the key lesson. Real spiritual power has nothing to do with finding ourselves in a crisis and then crying out to someone or something to save us from the pain of a misstep that we took in the darkness of ourselves. Real spiritual power is to live within an ever-present relationship with an interior light that could no more make a wrong turn in life than could a river mistake its way back home to the ocean towards which it's drawn. I'm talking about an ineffable quality, something that you don't have to struggle to have. A river doesn't struggle to return to the ocean, does it? Wouldn't it be nice to have inside of you something that was always flowing, and not only flowing, but taking you with it into a better relationship with everyone around you, with the world itself, so that we're no longer doing to it what we're doing, and most important of all, that we're no longer doing to ourselves what we've been doing to ourselves. So, let's take one of our deep breaths, because we're going to have a story now to examine some of these ideas. First story is about the idea of this new self-knowledge and what it brings to us. Once upon a time, how many of you like stories that start with once upon a time? Okay. We don't grow up, do we? You know why we like once upon a time? Because a little bitty part of us, for a split second, remembers that there is a time, a real place in which what is good triumphs. This is such an important thing for us to remember. The world won't help you remember it. You'll have to do it yourself. Once upon a time, there was a country that was ruled by a good king, and it was a good country. And this good country, this good king, they heard of a rumor that a neighboring country, an evil country, if you will, a dark country that was ruled by a very, very dark wizard, an evil wizard, was trying to send over groups to try to take over the kingdom that the good king lived in. Now, the good king had a good prince, and he could be a prince and a good princess, but this is about a prince tonight, okay? And the good prince heard that the good king was sending out the troops to stop the incursion of the evil ones, and he didn't want to not take part in that. It was natural in him. But his father, he knew his father wasn't about to allow it. He was too young, really. And so he donned a disguise. And he got on a horse, and when all the horsemen and all the soldiers rolled out the great gates, he was there riding along, hoping that nobody would notice. But most people didn't know him anyway, because he'd been sheltered inside of that kingdom. And when they finally got to the place where the great battle was, it was a huge skirmish. And just so you know, the good kingdom won. But during the battle, the young prince and thousands of men were either knocked off of their horses or clubbed down, but in general lost track of the rest of the people that after the war had taken place, so that they had been taken by the people from the evil world, the evil country, and they'd been taken back to the evil country, even though the war had gone well for their good kingdom. They wound up back in this bad kingdom. And the young prince, when he fell off of his horse, he'd hit his head so hard he had a kind of amnesia. He didn't know who in the heck he was. And it wouldn't have mattered almost anyway, because part of living in that kingdom where it was dark and where the evil wizard was, there was a continual spell that emanated from the center of that kingdom that made everyone that was there believe that they were in the right place where they were supposed to be and doing what they were supposed to be doing. That it was just part of the kingdom. And there were governors there and generals that worked in league with the evil wizard. And they were horrible human beings, meaning that they never did anything truly right. All they did was serve who were serving them for the purpose of getting them to serve more. Now, you'll understand this story in a little more deeply in a moment. Well, you know, when you live in a world like that, and there's a certain spell that's come over you, the spell itself tells you that you're in the right place. And the spell tells you that you're doing the right thing in that place. That's what a spell is. By the way, has anybody ever been under a spell here? Let me clear that up for you. Did you ever think that buying that thing you couldn't afford was going to fix something? Yeah. See, that's a spell, isn't it? Do you ever think that you know, this didn't do it, but next time that'll be it, and you go running off on your horse, and you get clobbered, and then we wake up and you realize, oh, that wasn't it either. All right, so we know now. See, we can agree. We're all under a spell from time to time, aren't we? Maybe more than we think. But something wonderful started to happen to the prince. And I want something wonderful to start to happen to you, too. That's why we're here tonight. And what started happening to the young prince, even though he had no idea who he was, and none of the other men recognized him because either they didn't know him or they were under the spell that made them forget all of everything about where they'd been from and that they told them they were in the right place doing the right thing. But the young prince, he began to have a terrible kind of conflict in himself, a real struggle. And he couldn't figure out for the life of him what was going on. Not for the life of him, because here was the problem. He was told by the governors and the generals of this dark country that he was to do certain things that were not only good for him, but that were good for everyone else that he did that to. He was told that to fight, to struggle, to take, to somehow get everything, to bring it back, all that, that this was the right thing to do. But inside of him, there was something happening. And here's what it was. He couldn't reconcile in himself, how is it possible that if I'm doing what is right for me, I feel so wrong? How is that possible? And at first, you understand, it wasn't big. It was tiny because the spell was intense. It was deep. It ran to the root of him. But inside of him lived, if you will, that part of his father, the king, part of what was true. And little by little, no matter how powerful the spell was, that surfaced inside of him until he began to look around, and everything that came to him that he was told to do, when he was told to do it, he heard that it was the right thing to do. He'd been brainwashed to believe that that was indeed, and he wanted to do what was right, but he knew in his heart it was wrong. Now, shall I bring you into the talk? How many of you know in your heart of hearts it's never right to deliberately hurt another human being? I want to see. You know it's not right. You know it's not right to be cruel, to say things to others that hurt them. And yet, isn't it true we do it? Let me see hands. Get them up. That's right. We still do it. But when we do it, God willing, we understand. Now, wait a minute. You know, somebody said something that I overheard. And I overheard it had something to do with me. And I'm starting to feel this fight come up. I'm starting to feel like I got to go straighten them out. Because I can never feel right about myself unless I let them know where they're wrong. How many of you know that one? And right in the middle of that part of you that wants to lash out or straighten someone out or fix the world, however you're going to do it, right in the middle of it, there's a little tiny conflict that's been pushed away. And the conflict is this: how can what I'm doing be right if it makes me feel so wrong? How is that possible? And we've had it pushed down so many times until we've come to believe that the only way for things to be right is for ourselves to become a righteous person, a righteousness unto ourselves that's going to fix the world and fix that person. Even though, and I'm going to keep bringing you back to the top of the talk, here I am and I'm trying to fix that person, control that person. I'm fighting in order to regain what I think I've lost, but I've lost the moment I've begun that fight. So here's this prince, and he's torn. He's torn because what is he to do? He doesn't know. And here's what happens to a man or a woman who hears what I'm saying and who has felt inside of themselves that kind of interior tearing where I can see that I'm saying things I don't want to say, and I'm afraid not to say them for fear of losing something, but on the other side, I've lost myself. I know it's not good. And this struggle reaches such a point inside of a person when they're willing to work consciously to put truth first, self-knowledge first. And then the prince, one day, he's sitting there and he's given an instruction to go out and make destruction. He's given an instruction to go make destruction. And right in the middle of it, as he's getting ready to go out, the pitch inside of him reaches such a point, he woke up. He could no longer do what he'd always been doing. You know that passage, I don't do the good I want to do, instead I do the evil I don't want to do? He reached a certain, he couldn't do it, and it reached such a pitch inside of him, and this is what most of us won't get to because we're so used to just bending over, accepting that we have to do what we know isn't right for ourselves in order to have a time in our future where we'll have rightness. There is no time in the future where rightness comes if we do wrong to ourselves or others. And this isn't moralistic, you'll see as I go further in this. He woke up right in the middle of it, and he remembered he was a prince. How many of you'd like to remember something like that? Meaning, you know, I'm not talking about a castle and gold. I mean, I live in a place already that's good. I'm in the wrong world here. That's what's been wrong. I've been in the wrong place. I've been serving the wrong king. I've been doing the wrong things because I didn't know. And so, having awakened, having come back and remembered himself, he goes and he finds some of his men. Wake up, man! Kind of like I'm doing to you. Wake up! We're in the wrong place. This isn't our world. Don't you see it? Look, think about it. How can this be our world if everything we're doing is wrecking it and ourselves? Who wrecks their own world? And only a few of the men, because the spell was so deep, were able to be snapped out of it sufficiently enough to follow the prince back home to the good kingdom and the good king. Now, that's what I'm talking about when I say new self-knowledge. This very beautiful moment in which, for whatever reasons, a person has brought themselves where they're no longer willing to go along with things that don't work, with compromising themselves, and they gain an insight.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
You You know, people talk a lot today about enlightenment, about all that nonsense. Every time that you can see yourself doing something to yourself that is not good for yourself or any other human being, and in that moment that you see it, you realize it and stop it, congratulations, you've just become enlightened. Why? Because where a darkness was, now a light dwells. Isn't that what something is when it's enlightened? Into a place that darkness dwelled, a light has come. And when a man or a woman will invite enough light into their life, enough understanding that takes the place of misunderstanding and mistrust and destruction, then that person begins to live a different kind of life because they're in a new relationship in themselves. Remember I said new self-knowledge leads to new relationship? Now, what does that mean? Well, let's look at the prince quickly, and then I'm going to tell you another story. When I understand that I don't have to do what I've been doing, then I actually, in that moment, have a new relationship with the parts of me that tell me unless I do what I've been doing, something bad's going to happen to me. Can you see it? Suddenly the relationship changes. Because new self-knowledge, that light brings to a person that fantastic process by which they can begin to partake in the world that they're intended to take part in. So let's get to the next story. Take a nice deep breath. I'm going to do it too. Go ahead. Move your body even. This is the story of Tessa. And Tessa was a beautiful young girl who lived in the Midwest. And her sister, Claudia, had, by good fortune, sometime earlier in their lives, maybe a year or two, had come to Hollywood, California to become an actress. Now, Claudia didn't quite make it to the actress stage yet, but she had become a stand-in for a very powerful and successful actress. Now, how many of you know what a stand-in is? Everybody know? A stand-in is someone who actually does the work. That's life, isn't it? How many of you want a stand-in? Yeah. So this was Tessa's great journey to the West, to Hollywood, because she was going to get to go see her sister. Not only see her sister, but she was going to go have a meal with her sister in the commissary on the studio lot. And she was so excited because, you know, when you watch a lot of TV and movies, you think that the people that you see, that you think they must be gods. They're veritable geniuses, if only. And so she wanted to rub the elbows with these people, and she walked into the commissary. Now, I failed to tell you this. Tessa and Claudia were almost twins. They looked very, very much like each other. You know, they're born a few moments apart. Not quite twins, but looked like twins. And when Tessa walked into the front part of the commissary, there was a maitre d' there, and he looked up and he smiled, and she wondered why he was smiling, and he said, "You must be Tessa." Already I'm important, she thought. "Your sister called. She's a little bit delayed, and she's asked that I sit you at a table and that she'll join you in a few minutes. So come on in, please." Now, how many of you can get this? Tessa, when she walks into the big commissary and there's all the leather booths and the mirrors and the celebrities, how many of you think Tessa's comfortable walking in there? You know she's not comfortable. All she can do is think about what she looks like, how she's walking. Is her head held proper? Is her shoulder out? Whatever it is that people are supposed to do when they're trying to make an impression. And she's so nervous that she bumps into the cocktail table, knocks over a drink, and you know what happens when you knock over a drink? Now she starts sweating. Because she's thinking that everybody in the whole place is looking at her. And the maitre d' sees how nervous she is, and he actually understands it, and he takes her hand and says, "Don't worry about that, come." And he sits her down at a nice table booth, a corner booth, where she can look out and see all of the celebrities that are sitting there. And she's trying to look as cool as she knows how to look. When, because she's so absorbed in with making, trying in one hand, you know, have you ever tried to stare at somebody, the moment they look, you know, her head was moving around like that. She didn't notice a certain silence come over the whole commissary. And what had happened was that in the moment when she was still absorbed over in one side, Stanley Manless Heart. Is it that obvious? Okay. Stanley Manless Heart, the world famous director, who had a reputation, and Tessa knew it, of being the most angry, but you know, so-called creative genius, but a real fireball, and nobody liked him because Claudia, her sister, was working on the film that Manless Heart was directing. And she didn't see him come in until it was too late when she stood up and when he's turned around and he's standing right there at the table, glaring down at her. She felt like a bird caught in the eyes of a snake, just like that. And he says to her, "What do you think you're doing, young lady?" And now, try to remember, she's in a commissary trying to make a good impression. And here's the big director, and he's addressing her down. "What do you think you're doing, young lady?" What would happen to you, by the way? You know, eyes wide open, mind racing 1,000 miles an hour because she's thinking about what people are thinking about her. She doesn't know what to say because why is he talking to her in the first place? And he says, do you think I've got all the time in the world? Still can't say anything. Oh, so you think you're more important than the picture, huh? And her mind's racing 1,000,000 miles an hour. Have you ever been assaulted in a manner of speaking by an angry person? Or let me bring it more to the point. Have you ever had your own mind turn on you and it starts throwing commands and talking to you? And there you are. You don't know what to say because you didn't even know what it's talking about yet. That's what fear does. Like that. And he says, he goes on, you stupid child. And she starts to shrink down in her chair because now it's just too much. She doesn't know what to think. She's starting to shrink down in her chair. You are the most self-serving. All you think about is yourself. You don't care about the budget. You don't care about this. And for a split second, it dawns on her what's going on. And not only does it dawn on her what's going on, but something else has happened. In that moment, she has a revelation. She has a true epiphany, a true spiritual moment. And what happens in that split second, more or less, is she looks back at him, and she sees a rageful face, a trembling mouth, hands shaking. And she looks at him, and she sees a frightened man. And at that instant, she says to him, sir, you obviously have mistaken me for someone over whom you must have considerable power. But you, sir, you have addressed the wrong woman. I don't answer to you. I don't answer to you. And you know what big, powerful Stanley Menless Heart did at that moment? That's right. His eyes went wide, his mouth fell open, the blood drained from his face, and he didn't know what to do except to turn away and walk out of that commissary. I don't answer to you. Five words. Five words. And what they mean is that as you've grown and begun, you acquire this knowledge of yourself that we're talking about, and something comes up inside of you and it wants to make you cling to that problem, hold on to whatever it is, fight like we talk about, and it's pushing you because it does, just like Manless Heart pushes, threatens. And all of our lives, we've always done almost one thing every time something like that happens, where those thoughts and feelings rage up inside of us and begin to tell us who we are and what we can do and what's possible for us and dresses us down in the way it does. Our whole lives, we've basically done one thing, which is answer to that. But now, we're learning something. Remember I said that new self-knowledge produces a new relationship within ourselves? What's the new relationship? I don't answer to you. I don't answer to you. I don't answer to a thought that berates me. I don't answer to a thought that tells me to go out and hurt another human being. I don't answer to a thought that tells me something bad's going to happen tomorrow. And you know what? And I mean, I don't care what it is that it tells you. See, that's the point. Manless Heart represents in our own psychology a certain part of our nature that knows exactly what to say to us about what we are and what needs to happen for us in order for us to continue being the man or woman that we've mistaken ourselves to be. And when a person understands that clearly, they realize, you know what? I don't have to answer to you. And when you actually begin to realize you don't have to answer to those parts of yourself like that, there's no other recourse that those parts can take except to stand there and then turn around and walk away. This new relationship, wherein you begin to understand that all along, you've allowed a certain part of yourself to tell you who you are, what you should do, how you should do it, who you have to get the approval of, what is necessary in order for you to be a successful human being. All day long, this thing hammering and yammering, and when we do what it wants us to do, no problem. Just like Manless Heart gets everybody to do what he wants them to do for fear that if they don't do what he wants them to do, he has something he can take away from them. But you see, I'm asking you, what can a negative thought or feeling take away from you? All it can do is threaten us, which is all they do. So this new relationship produces something that's the next step, the third pillar, which is the new authority. So let's take a deep breath, because we have another story that exemplifies the new authority. There was once a traveling reporter, sort of like a USA reporter, something like that, who went out and did stories on America, on Americana. And in this particular instance, she was doing a story on the Midwest small towns. And she was particularly interested in the social structure and how men and women got along and what happened at these large, big dances that would take place in small towns. And that's what she was covering, was a big dance in a small town. And so she got into town a few days early, knowing that everybody would be coming from miles around the various ranches and farms and the areas around the town, and there would be a fantastic dance. And so the night of the dance comes, and she's doing the best that she can to be, you know, unnoticed, because a good reporter doesn't want everybody to know that she's doing a story. And she's watching, and she's moving around and sitting at different tables and different places. And she notices, as the evening goes on, a certain phenomena taking place. And here's what she notices. She notices that whenever the ladies get together, after a dance has come to an end, that they're often talking about, well, maybe the idiot that asked them to dance. Let's just get it out on the table. Complaining about, you know, this, that, and the other. So others talking about how nobody knows anything. Everybody hurts. And just making sort of cruel remarks and gossiping about the men, gossiping about the event. But she notices that the whole night, there's one woman that, even though she's sitting at time to time amongst these other ladies, that she's not doing anything like that. That actually her demeanor is always quite pleasant. She has a nice smile on her face. She's not saying anything negative about anyone for any reason at all. And as the night goes on, she watches with more and more interest this person, because she's thinking to herself, maybe this is the story I'm looking for. How could one person be so different than all of the others there? Finally, as the evening's getting nearer to its wrap-up, she decides that she needs to talk to this lady, and she walks up and she introduces herself, and she says who she is, that she's doing a story. And she says, I just want to ask you a couple questions if I can, because I've noticed this evening that unlike everyone else at this dance, you just seem to be having not only a good time, but I haven't seen you frown. I haven't seen you say anything denigrating about anybody here. I haven't heard you complain about the ball. I was just wondering, why is it that you're able to sit here and do what you do? And the young woman looks at her and says, well, it's really not that complicated. She says, well, please tell me what it is. He says, well, first of all, I only dance with the partners that I want to dance with. And the reporter looked at her and says, well, what do you mean you only dance with the partners that you want to dance with? Well, she said, if someone comes up and I don't want to dance with them, I don't say yes.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
I don't say yes. Well, the reporter said, well, that's fine, but what if the person pushes the point? What if that man that's come up to ask you for that dance, what if he's insistent? And the lady looked at her and says, I just say, I think I'm going to sit this one out. I think I'm going to sit this one out. Now, maybe it's possible for us to understand this idea of new authority relative to the idea of I don't answer to you by recognizing certain spiritual principles, certain things that are taking place all the time around us that we're not really awake to, aware of. But essentially, everything in life, and I love nature individually. I enjoy everything about what I see in nature, because I have a saying that inside of the common is hidden the celestial. That when you're able to look at life and see it properly in the simplest thing, you will see the most extraordinary spiritual principle. And in this instance, what I'm talking about is that everything in life, no exceptions, is in partnership with everything else. Everything. When you look at a tree, you may not think to yourself that the tree is in partnership with life, but obviously we know that it is, but it's more distinct than the idea of a partnership. It's actually a kind of dance, because that tree is sustained by a world that gives it a certain kind of life, so it's sustained on one hand, and at the same time that the tree is sustained by the world, it is also governed by certain principles that it serves. So everything always, all things in the universe stand in a kind of middle position between that which sustains them, that which is sustained in them, meaning the tree in this instance, and that which governs that tree. So there's a constant play of three forces in all times, and they're always interacting with one another. And when we can understand that this dance is going on, that sometimes, just like, see the tree, when the wind blows, the tree has to bend, doesn't it? Or it breaks. We even know that. So you could say that in one respect that the tree governs the wind. Excuse me, that the wind governs the tree. But in the moment where the tree is governed by that wind, it's not fighting with the wind. There is no conflict with it because its life has been part of a partnership with wind and rain and soil. Now, here's the point of this. We too, as human beings, physical beings, we live in a world where we're sustained at one hand by worlds beneath ourselves, by physicality, but we're also part and parcel of a world that governs us, meaning that sits above us. There's no exceptions to this. Except for this, and this is really important. The tree can't do anything when the wind comes to it. The wind stirs the tree. We, on the other hand, as human beings, have a choice over what to do with what is stirred in us by that which stirs. Now, I'll say it in simpler terms. Somebody says something to you that you don't like. There's the wind. There's the rain. Here comes the rain. Now, the rain has to stir. Look, rain hits dirt, turns it to mud. That's a law. There's no escaping that. But in this partnership, in this dance that I'm talking about, when an event takes place, when someone says something, or the world turns right instead of going left, or sometimes your own mind can produce a thought that's an event unto itself, that when that thought comes, when that event takes place, and that stirring takes place inside of us, at that point, we alone have the possibility, and I'll go back to the story now, to not be a partner to it. To sit it out. See, the tree can't sit out the wind. The earth can't sit out the rain. It's going to be turned to mud. It's going to slide. That's what it does. There's no exceptions. But human beings, we as human beings, have within us something altogether of a different order that allows us to not only be awake at the moment where someone says something that's not to our liking, where a bit of news comes and it seems to threaten our happiness, or somebody that we're married to or a friend of ours says something and it cuts us to the bone. There's that active force. Then it comes and strikes us. It stirs what it stirs. You can't stop the stirring. You cannot stop what's stirred, but you can stop their serving it. That's what it means to begin to have a new authority. To begin to understand that every moment of our lives, and there's no exceptions to this, and it's taking place right in this theater while I'm talking to you, that every moment of our lives, we are in a constant relationship with life, with the way people look. How many of you have ever been stirred just by the way somebody looked at you? And I'm not talking about a happy time. That's exactly right. You're sitting there, you might even be just eating your toast in a restaurant, and you look over and they think you're like Weird Bill or something like that. They've mistaken you for Claudia, okay? Now you tell the truth. What happens in a moment where someone is doing something unwanted towards you, when a thought comes that's unwanted and punishes you? You know what we do. You talking to me? Right? Are you talking to me? The event, the stirring, and then because we don't understand yet, instead of the stirring stopping there, meaning you and I becoming conscious of the fact that if we're about to fight with anything or try to control it, that the very opening of that part of ourselves has already caused us to lose the possibility of transcending not only the event, but the self that meets life like that. So here it is, and that world turns, and it's never not turning. I'm going to break into my own talk here and tell you something that I want you to hear. We human beings live in a world that, because of the way in which we have been raised, our society, our culture, the whole of it, has caused us to become creatures that only know ourselves by the things that we see outside of ourselves. And because of the unique way in which our sense of identity is derived from becoming identified with possessions or powers or whatever it may be that we've aligned our purpose in life with, which isn't even our purpose, causes us to be absolutely isolated, cut off from a world that you're sitting in, even as I'm speaking to you, that is an absolute dynamic place where every thought, every feeling, every movement of energy, and I can't tell you how vast it is, it can't even be spoken about, is in a continual process of stirring the human being. Stirring the human being for the purpose of that stirring, allowing that human being to participate in a completely different order of a creative life that immediately entails being stirred and then recognizing what's going on and letting go so that the next stirring can take place. But as we are now, life stirs us. Someone says something. Something happens atmospherically. A condition takes place globally. In comes the moment. In comes the movement. And instead of that stirring allowing us to let go of ourselves and realize a whole another life, we become the one who stops the whole world right there. We form an image of it. Our mind fashions an idea about what that means. In other words, that thought, that event stirs in us something. And at that split second that it stirs in us, yes or no, we wind up serving manless heart who's telling us who we are and what we need to do in order to keep our lives in place. Yes or no? I want to see hands. You know it's true. You know it's true. What a different world it can be for you. Forget, don't worry about the world at large. If you and I would do what was right and necessary as individuals and realize that simply because something is stirred in us doesn't mean that we have to serve it. Just because a fear comes up doesn't mean that we have to answer it. Just because a worry presses in doesn't mean we have to figure out who's responsible for it or how we can fix the situation and blame for it. See, that's what happens. Here comes an event. It stirs something negative inside of us. The minute the negativity is stirred, it starts to tell us who we are. And we now understand that we don't have to answer that. You don't have to answer that. How? How do you know? Well, see, this is where the spiritual rubber meets the road. I like to say that truth is a full contact sport. See, it's one thing to have great ideas, wonderful principles. They're empowering when we hear them. But it's another thing for us to go home and look in the mirror, see inside of our own eyes the what didn't happen the way we wanted it to look at our friends or family, to get caught up in thinking about the past or worrying about the future. And in those moments, the whole idea of principles are lost because now we're in the power of our own mind, our own heart, telling us that we have to answer these negative thoughts and feelings. So you see, letting go has connected to it the idea that it isn't simply an idea that I'm going to be someone who lets go of a problem. Letting go has everything to do with understanding that if I'm really going to let go, what must be let go of is who I was up until that moment where I felt that stirring. Because you see, if someone can set us off, do you understand that the minute someone sets you off, you may sit and say, I'm angry and I'm going to fight back, but they own you. Anyone that makes you negative owns you. But our anger tells us, no, they don't own me, I own them, because wait till you see what I do. Wait till you see how I straighten this out. How many of you ever said to yourself, I'm never going to do that again? And then you do it again, don't you? Why? Because we didn't learn the lesson. We didn't learn the lesson. The lesson in life isn't to go and figure out some way to become more powerful than whatever it is you say overpowered you. That's not the lesson. That's what the world, back to the first story, that's the dark country. That's the dark country in which everyone is told, here's your purpose, fulfill it, and you'll be pleased. You'll be fulfilled. And then a person spends his whole life trying to go out and make something of himself because he believes that if he actually accomplishes what was sown into his mind, that when he crosses the finish line, at last he'll be the whole man or the whole woman he hoped to be. But he crosses the finish line and there is no finish line. There's another starting gun. Or he has to compromise himself in order to obtain a goal. How many of you understand, have been through this? You say to yourself, you know, I don't really want to do this, but if I do it, it'll lead to where a place I never have to do it again. It's a lie. See, it's a lie. You know what it boils down to? Look how simple this is, how beautiful it is. No one has told us we don't have to be afraid. No one's told you that. See, the fear. How many of you ever seen an angry person? How many? Looking in a mirror, right? I want you to, next time you see an angry person, including yourself, I want you to know you're looking at a frightened person. Anytime you see someone angry, you're looking at a frightened human being. And what are they afraid of? Listen to this. They're afraid of what their own mind is telling them is going to happen to them if they don't do what manless heart tells them to do. And we can do something so different. I think I'll sit this one out. Oh, yeah, see, look, here comes, see, you're out with your friend and somebody says something and you can feel it, you want to start explaining yourself, you want to start telling why they're wrong or why that shouldn't be like that, how come the world this, and you start to get all that, and in the middle of it you recognize you've been asked to dance and you don't have to. You can sit it out, but here's where it gets tough, and I wouldn't lie to you. Anybody that tells you that true spiritual life, a true religious life, is an easy life, is lying to you. It costs you, you. But not you. Because when I say it costs you, you, what I'm talking about is in the moment where that fear comes, that worry comes, the split second it starts to surface and it starts to say, will you dance with me? Meaning, will you get engaged in talking about how we can fight and take over and fix this or whatever it is? And you say, I'll sit this one out. It will then say to you the following. If you sit this out, you will lose everything. And you know what your answer is? I have another partner. And who's your new partner? This beautiful understanding that allows you to not only recognize intellectually the fact that you're not on this planet to serve what is making you suffer, but the actual understanding in the heart that when a person will, in the moment of that question where they're asked to dance, where manless heart comes up and starts to throttle you and tell you all the things about yourself and why you'll never this. And you, in that moment, you don't have that. Now back to the last story. You don't have to answer manless heart because he and that world is not your world. It's not your world. It's not your world. But I know how hard it is to understand that because in the moment of the mechanical reaction when manless heart or that dark dance partner comes up and says, let's get involved, all there seems to be at that moment is your world. Where you understand? Where is this world? Where is this wonderful light? Where is this new authority, this new relationship? You're like, where did it go? And that's where the work is, because in that moment, that's where you have to decide for yourself. No one can do it for you. No one can do it for you. To make it an aim, which we're going to do tonight, because we're getting ready to wind up this talk, to make it an aim. To understand that before this night is out, I guarantee it, by the time we walk out of this theater, manless heart will have appeared. The war will have started and the wizard will be doing his thing. And someone's going to step on your toes. I think I'll sit this one out. Because instead of getting involved with what wants to drag me down into its world that I know is no longer my own, I'm going to choose in favor of a new partner, the light of understanding, the goodness of truth. You use the words that you wish. The words are not the important thing. The important thing is to remember yourself in that moment and to risk everything. Take the action that leads to a complete new life because you've begun at last to realize all that we've been talking about. And I tell you, it's true. If you'll even take the smallest step in the right direction of sitting out that moment where you're going to fix something about someone or your own life or whatever it is, if you just take the smallest step, you won't believe what will step towards you. But you have to do the work to find that out. And I hope you will.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.